Podcasting from the Garden State, welcome to another edition of the New Jersey Legal Update, presented by Stark & Stark, a 100-attorney law firm with offices in Princeton, Cherry Hill, Philadelphia, and New York. The New Jersey Legal Update is a weekly podcast providing the latest information on legal developments impacting those living or doing business in New Jersey.
My name is Timothy Dugan. I'm here with Vince Mangini, my partner. We are attorneys with the law firm of Stark & Stark. We work out of our Princeton office. Tonight we're going to be talking about redevelopment law and condemnation. It's, as you've probably read in the paper, throughout New Jersey, and in particular this area, there's many redevelopment plans that are being kicked around. Some of them are being implemented. And we, at our firm, get a lot of questions from individuals. What does it mean? What does it mean to me? Is it good? Is it bad? Are they going to take my property? And we found these seminars where we're able to go out and speak to people and explain the process, enables them to make informed decisions on how they should react. We're not here to advocate any particular plan, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether you should challenge it, whether you should support it. Our idea tonight is to, or goal tonight, is to educate you on the redevelopment process, how it works, what you need to do to make informed decisions, and if it reaches the stage of condemnation where the municipality is actually going to come forward and take your property, what your rights are and what you can do. I'll turn the program over to Vince to start with the redevelopment program, and I will follow with a condemnation, traditional condemnation case. And what we'll do is use, instead of a formal outline, we have these flow charts. They're a little technical, a little complicated, but we'll walk you through the steps of a redevelopment process, and to my left is a flow chart for a traditional condemnation case. Those charts are in your materials, and it may be helpful to follow them along.
You do have materials, as Tim pointed out. In addition to the flow chart that we've provided, we've also made copies of the resolution that originally designated the East End redevelopment area back in 1999. And we've also provided as a separate handout the draft plan that was produced in 2004. Our understanding is that that plan was never adopted, and that relatively recently, the borough decided to revisit not only this plan, but apparently some other plans, and there's a fairly good deal of activity now in Somerville with respect to redevelopment. My understanding is that they will be re-examining this specific plan, and what happens with respect to that is anybody's guess. Obviously, if you own property or you otherwise have an interest in redevelopment, and specifically the East End redevelopment area, you should attend any planning or borough council meetings that may be held with respect to that planning process. Now, with respect to the generalities of law, one of the first questions we put on our little invitation here was, what is an area in need of redevelopment designation and what does it mean? In redevelopment under the current law, and the current law is the local redevelopment housing law, that's what all towns have to abide by when they designate property to be in need of redevelopment. This is done in a number of phases. And this can come about in a number of different ways. Oftentimes, a developer who's interested in building within a town or city environment will go to a mayor's office, meet with city council members, and feel them out as to whether or not they want to redevelop a given area and make a proposal for that area. If the fathers and mothers in the town approve of it, initially, the city council or the borough council, what have you, will advise formally through a resolution process their planning board to do a study. That study is known as a preliminary investigation, and that has to be advertised. Notice has to be published, and anybody who owns property or who is otherwise on a list to receive notice, who has an interest in that property and is on an official list with the town, receives notice of the hearing that goes before the planning board. The hearing that goes before the planning board will occur at some point after they've been authorized by the borough or the city, as the case may be, to have the hearing. that hearing on the preliminary investigation is where evidence is put forth. Evidence is almost always put forth by either the in-house planner, if the town has its own full-time planner, or if the town has hired an outside planner to study the area and prepare a report. During that hearing, which is a public hearing, evidence will be put forth as to whether or not a given area, one property, 10 properties, 100 properties, whatever the study area is, meets the criteria, what's known as the redevelopment criteria under the statute for a redevelopment zone. In addition to properties that may meet the criteria, municipalities are permitted to include properties that are not blighted or do not otherwise meet the criteria if they can show that those properties are necessary for the effective redevelopment of the study area. Now, the criteria is fairly loose. It's fairly liberal, let's say. It allows municipalities to include many types of properties which the average person walking on the street might scratch their head and say, is this really a blighted property? The statute under Section 5 lists basically seven criteria for blighted properties, such as if a property is dilapidated, if an area is obsolete. That's one of the more generous terms that municipalities have to include properties in a redevelopment zone. Many older properties are obsolete, have layouts that are not in accordance with current zoning standards, are not completely useful by a modern standard, but are still useful properties, are still tax-paying properties. And there's a real friction between towns and property owners sometimes with respect to these very close calls. So property can be included at this stage of the game under current law under many different reasons. It can also be included in a redevelopment area if for some reason the town believes that redevelopment would further smart growth principles. Smart growth principles is a very loose term. It's not very specifically defined, and it's one of the major criticisms that our public advocate, who was recently appointed, has put in his report on eminent domain reform for redevelopment.
What's interesting about it is you could probably, with that criteria, blight or say 70% of the state of New Jersey is in need of redevelopment. You could find a land planner to, I live in Lambertville, a land planner would take about 10 minutes to say the entire town is in need of redevelopment because of obsolete designs and all this fuzzy criteria. So when there's a lot of political pressure and momentum behind a redevelopment plan, when that plan goes forward at this initial stage, most towns will be successful in finding a planner to come up with a report to designate a fairly large area in need of redevelopment. And you're finding that in downtown Princeton, they were successful with an area. It's happening all down the shore. So at these early stages, it's very important to find out what properties are being included and then attend that planning board meeting to find out what they're saying about your property and see whether you agree. If it's abandoned properties in a downtown section of Newark or one of the larger cities, you can understand that. When they start moving out into the different towns, it gets dicier and dicier, which is why it's so important early on to get involved in the process.
Yes, and that leads me to another point. The evidentiary standard. One of the things that a lot of towns tend to believe is that they can hire a planner who can basically do a very superficial study and throw out conclusions. This area is obsolete. Or the parking situation here is detrimental to a useful economic flow in town. Those types of conclusions are not evidence. Conclusions by their very nature are not evidence. And when designations are challenged, they can be effectively challenged when people either do one of several things. If they attend those meetings and they put forth their own evidence, either through professionals or through their own lay testimony based upon their knowledge of the area and their own property. And by and or by challenging in court those designations and showing how the town didn't do what it was supposed to do. So there is a way out at times when you're put in a redevelopment area if you're vigilant in pursuing your rights either up front or in court later. Now, most of your circumstances, given the fact that you're property owners, many of you are property owners within the East End area, you're too late to challenge directly whether or not the redevelopment zone was crafted properly. However, and Tim will get into more detail on this point, but I'll say it now briefly, is if your property is ever condemned under redevelopment plan for the East End, there is some case law, when I say case law, judge-made law, not precedential, but some unpublished decisions that have held that people who challenge designations in the context of condemnation, borough comes in, tries to take your property, files a complaint, and then you hire an attorney and you file an answer saying, no, you can't take that property for such and such a reason. At that stage, some courts are allowing people to challenge the validity of the designation, even though it may be years and years after that designation was initially adopted. And that certainly is the case here. 1999 is now 7 years old ago. But that doesn't mean that you wouldn't have the opportunity to challenge it again in the context of condemnation, not a direct challenge. So the redevelopment designation, once it's there, for whatever reason, under whatever criteria, or if you're deemed necessary to complete a plan, to effectuate a plan, is the first step in creating a redevelopment initiative, which can include the acquisition of your property through redevelopment. It doesn't by itself change zoning, and it doesn't by itself give the governing body power, or the redevelopment entity, if it's different from the governing body, the power to take your property. The second phase in the process is the redevelopment plan. What will happen is, after the planning board has recommended to borough council that an area be designated, and assuming that the borough council has designated it at a separate meeting, and by resolution designated it, then the decision will come as to whether or not the town wants to develop a plan. If they develop a plan, which I think was tried twice in this case, the borough council will either authorize the planner or hire a planner, outside planner, to prepare a plan, or they will authorize their planning board to oversee that. Either way, both bodies will have a time to look at what the other body does. And at some point, if they move forward with the plan, it will be introduced as an ordinance, or an ordinance will be introduced to adopt it along the same lines that any ordinances are introduced and adopted. Usually, it'll be introduced first on first reading, and then if it passes on first reading, the governing body will provide notice, not to individual property owners, but in the newspapers, and there'll be a public hearing on that plan. Now, evidently, and I don't pretend to know all the history of Somerville or even all the redevelopment history of Somerville, but from what we've looked at, it appears that in 1999, the borough council attempted to pass a redevelopment plan for the area in which you own property. In 2004, they revised it, and an attempt was made again, and apparently was not adopted. Our understanding is that the borough is getting ready again to re-examine the 2004 plan, and will, in all likelihood, hold hearings and try to develop a new plan. It is very important for you, as property owners or otherwise interested persons, to attend those hearings on the plan. And the planning board may not have a hearing on the matter, but the borough council will have to have at least one hearing when it goes on second reading after having been introduced. So you're not going to get notice of it, but the way you would find out is to stay in touch with the municipal clerk, get copies of the agendas, read your newspaper, read your public notices in the Courier or whatever. I'm not sure what paper Somerville uses, but whatever their official paper is, you got to keep your eyes open to see when a hearing is set or scheduled for this new plan, reexamination, whatever it may be. Somerville may take a different process. I have read that there is a visioning program that's also underway right now, and that apparently the borough may want to coordinate the vision planning with at least some of their redevelopment planning. But you need to stay as property owners on top of it, because that can change any day as to what approaches they take and what they do or don't do. Now, the plan may very well include a provision in it that allows for condemnation. The current plan, which, as I said, we've provided you, the current draft plan, doesn't provide for eminent domain. It does provide for two basic types of development. It allows for existing development to be maintained within fairly strict within fairly strict regulations, and it allows for broader or major development through an overlay zone, which more or less anticipates some type of redeveloper coming in and acquiring land. Now, the plan intends for that land to be acquired through good faith negotiations, but it does hold open the possibility of eminent domain. And that is the primary or principal tool in the municipality's toolbox when it comes to redevelopment. When an area is designated and then a plan is adopted for it, eminent domain becomes available, as do many, many other powers and procedures under the local redevelopment housing law. Municipalities can do many things under that law, and including eminent domain, which is, as I said, the primary tool, the big tool when it comes to property owners. So at this point in time, there's no official plan, and the borough cannot condemn your property until that plan is put in place. But once it is, and if it's put in place, and if it includes your property as to be acquired, you can expect at some point that you may very well be acquired. And in a nutshell, that is the redevelopment process. Redevelopment designation, first step. Redevelopment plan, second step. Powers under the local redevelopment housing law become vested in the town once that plan is put in place. And unless you challenge it timely, again, you can challenge the plan too. You can challenge the designation or the plan, and or the plan. But if you don't do it within a timely fashion, you're basically limited to challenging it once your property is condemned. And I will emphasize that it's not a certainty that you will be allowed to do it. I'm just telling you this because there are cases, there are judges out there that have held that property owners may challenge, but not all judges have held that. So without further ado and explanation, I think that gives you a broad view of what the process is. Have any of you been through the process before, or are there any questions that you may have about the process and as it relates to property?
And you'll see through the diagram we have, you get this, to ping pong. Municipality, the governing body, planning board, governing body, planning board, back and forth. And it's very important, if you are very concerned about it, to figure out, going through this flow chart, where you are, what step in the process you are, and what your rights are. What we found from a lot of our clients is when you have a redevelopment plan, people aren't sure if it's good or bad for either them or the area. So there's some, and I think the people fall into three groups. You have the one group that says, no matter what, you're not taking my property, I'll fight you tooth and nail. It's the way it is. You have another group that says, well, if they pay me fair value, I'll give them my property. I don't have a problem with it. And then you have a third group that says, well, if it's easier to redevelop, can I come in and be a redeveloper? Can I redevelop my own property? I have a commercial building. Well, maybe this is good for me. Maybe I can come in and modify my building and actually be a redeveloper. In order for you to make a decision of where you fall in that area, I think you have to understand what they intend to do with the property, how it impacts you. And then once you have that information, make a decision. Do I support it? Do I not support it? If I do want to fight it, how do I do it? What's it going to cost? Can I get together with other people? Or do I just wait it out and see if they come and acquire my property? But it's very important to follow it. Go to the meetings. They're open public meetings. They're at night. Go in, get a copy of the plan, stand up and ask questions, of where we are, what are they going to do. And your number one question is, are you going to take my property? it will be very, very difficult for you to get a definitive answer. We've been at the meetings before, and you don't get an intentional runaround. Well, maybe we are. We don't intend to. We'll just try to buy it. It's very difficult to assemble property by doing individual negotiations. The power of the eminent domain is the ability to assemble a large piece of property to be able to come in and do a project. And people are all over the board on whether that's a good thing, whether that's a bad thing. And most people make the decision based upon how it impacts them, either financially or with a home, your lifestyle. And you see, the redevelopment has picked up a lot of steam in New Jersey and other areas. And a lot of the redevelopment has been very good. But it is open for abuse. And I think a lot of times, it's a difficult process, and people have a hard time just figuring out, is this good or is this bad?
One of the things you need, as I think I mentioned, that you need to be very cautious about with this planning process as it moves forward, is to try to preserve your right as property owners to develop or redevelop under the plan. Whatever the plan may be, assuming that the uses that are designated in the plan are consistent with current uses or with your vision for the property. But I think it's essential for a small property owner to make sure that the plan allows for voluntary compliance with the redevelopment plan. Whereas if the plan calls for a redeveloper to be appointed, then there's almost no question that at some point property is going to be condemned. So one of the key things is to make sure that you have the ability to redevelop. Another thing, and this is a positive on the side of redevelopment, is there are some benefits available to individual redevelopers. For example, certain property owners within a redevelopment area, depending on whether or not the town is agreeable to it, can apply for certain tax abatement or exemption benefits. There are also some funding programs through the state that may be available to rehabilitate property, depending on the circumstances. And then those programs are not only available to large redevelopers, some of them are available to individual property owners. So if you are put in a redevelopment zone, or if a plan is adopted for the redevelopment zone, you need to be proactive in figuring out what needs to be in there. So if there's going to be a plan, make it as positive to you as possible. See if the town, there are some towns that will provide beautification, streetscape funding, facade improvement funding. There are all kinds of things that towns will provide if you're proactive and make the suggestions. Also be careful with respect to facade improvements, architectural restraints. There are towns that will try to impose certain architectural restrictions, especially if there are historic buildings in the area. And that can be a problem because restoration is an expensive, some of you may know, is an expensive process. So it's nice to have historic buildings and it's nice to maintain them, but there is a give and take there. And if the process moves towards architectural restrictions that are problematic, you want to make sure that that is also changed and modified, not only eminent domain and permitted uses and voluntary compliance or development, but those types of other things as well. Towns can include a little bit more in their redevelopment plans than they might otherwise be able to do through regular zoning. First of all, they can't condemn under a regular zoning ordinance. But in terms of very, very specific things that they want to see, they can do that in redevelopment plans, whereas in zoning ordinances, they're more restricted to setback use, other types of bulk and dimensional requirements. The redevelopment plans can be much, much more detailed. And that's another reason why if you're going to own property in a redevelopment zone and there's not a plan yet in place, or even if there is a plan in place, you can always amend it to be proactive in that regard. What I think I'd like to talk about now, or have Tim talk about, is... Yes, go ahead.
Is it true that they can condemn you just because there will be an increase in tax revenues from that particular area?
Well, that's a good question. The U.S. Supreme Court recently decided a case, and maybe you all are familiar with it because it's been in the news, Kelo versus New London, which originated out of New London, Connecticut, but was decided ultimately by our U.S. Supreme Court. And one of the things that that court said was that economic development is a public use. In our Constitution, you cannot take property except for a public use and upon payment of just compensation. Those are the two restrictions. It has to be for a public use, and you have to pay just compensation. And, of course, you have to comply with due process as well. But what the court, well, the court had looked at this issue in other contexts before, it essentially relooked at the question of whether or not properties that aren't blighted but are in an area that a town wants to redevelop, can a town come in there and take those lands even though they're not blighted for economic development, for job growth, for tax revenue, for other types of things. And what the Supreme Court said was, yes, that economic development and redevelopment is a type of economic development. Economic development is much broader and can include many other things. But that they can come in and they can take non-blighted property. It's a public, it's a public use so long as there's a comprehensive plan for economic development and that plan has been put in place. In the New London case, that was the case. They had a redevelopment agency that had a plan to work with. There was a comprehensive redevelopment plan in place, and they implemented that plan, and in implementing it, they took properties that weren't blighted. The court basically said that that's okay, provided you do those things. You have a comprehensive plan, and the issue of just compensation was not really addressed.
The reading of the Constitution on this area has gotten crazy over the past 20 years. From public use, which is you build a road, you build a school, has been whittled down to some public benefit. Higher tax revenues, more jobs. That's it. That's a public use, which really is a public benefit. And it's gotten watered down where the answer is absolutely yes. And in New Jersey, they don't go under that Kelo case. They go under generally this separate statute that says they don't even have to prove higher tax revenue. They don't have to prove more jobs. They go through this statute and say, well, my planner says this area is obsolete. This area is dilapidated. Therefore, I can take it.
Right.
And oftentimes, all these initial stages are done with some newspaper advertising, and you're reading it, and you're reading the sports page. At 7:30, you get home, you're putting the kids to bed. It's not like it's not stapled to your front door where you're, wow, something's going on. You have to pick this up, and you have to affirmatively follow it, or all of a sudden it's going to be end of the process, and you're not sure what's going on unless a reporter is very aggressive about covering the topic. And I'm not saying that the redevelopment's bad. I mean, I think a lot of the redevelopment is very good, and it's a very good way to bring back, especially a lot of the cities, and help the growth. However, certain people with political ties may be able to persuade, in a state like New Jersey, certain select areas to be adopted. So I think that you do have to be diligent in looking at all these different redevelopment plans and determine how it impacts you and decide individually, is it good for me or is it bad for me, and is it good for the area? But the answer is absolutely yes.
Right.
And it's, I think ultimately when the Supreme Court came down with it, it woke up a lot of our state court judges. And I do think whatever side you're on, the courts are aware of these issues and people now are getting a fair say in court. Doesn't mean property owners are winning and the developers get their say, but I think the courts are looking at whether or not the laws are being followed and whether or not people's rights are being protected.
Right, and that goes back to what I was talking about before with respect to evidence and procedure. Although redevelopment is permitted public use, it's a type of economic development, they still have to abide by the statutory procedure. And embedded in our statutory procedure, in the local redevelopment housing law, as well as the eminent domain act, is our due process guarantee. You're guaranteed a right of due process. And that is abided by and played out when a town complies, assuming they do, with the various statutory procedures and the evidentiary standards. Where they fail to comply with that, it doesn't matter how great the purpose may be. That plan or that designation will be subject to attack if they haven't followed those procedures. So that's why you need to be vigilant. That's why you need to be part of the process and to state certain evidence, have experts on your side, because after all, this is your property. And you know, we're assuming that that represents your livelihood, or at least a portion of your livelihood. And it behooves you to be part of that process to make sure that they are establishing what they need to establish. And in so doing, hopefully they will address your concerns as their constituents as well. Not just one person, not just a couple, but everyone who has an interest in the plan should be heard, and to the extent possible, their interests embedded in that plan, so that the current property owners are protected, as well as the overall community's future vision for a given area.
What's very important, too, in the timing of this is if you're a commercial, you have a commercial piece of property, and we have clients that are constantly running into this. A plan is on, has been approved, and you're not sure if it's going forward. You want to make an improvement to your building. Do you do it or not? And if you do it, are you going to get your money back? Or you're a tenant. There's a redevelopment plan. Why do I want to lease that space? I'll do a six-month lease with you. There's a lot of practical problems, especially for the commercial property owners, when you're sitting there, you're going back, what was the designation,
99.
Okay, so you're 99, now we're in, it's 6-7 years later, they're still messing with the plan. If you're a property owner, that's a practical problem of do I go before the planning board? Do I make improvements? Is this, if they redevelop it might help my business, but am I going to be here or is there a new business going to be here? And I think that it's very important for the commercial property owners to try to find out where they are in this process and when are they going to, is this thing going to get done? Just because they approve it, there's a lot of plans that have been around. We have a plan that we looked at from 1969 down in the Trenton area. It's been on the books. There's one up in Franklin. It's been on the books for a very long time. It presents problems with people trying to make a decision. Do I invest in my property if they're going to take it? Am I going to enter a 10-year lease and do tenant improvements if I'm a tenant? And I think it's very important to get is you have to get the facts before you make that decision. And sometimes it's hard to get the facts, and it's very hard to predict the political climate, because you can have a change of who your council is. You could have a council that's in favor of something. New people get elected, and they're not in favor of it. And that's one of the political pressures on this process are very important to follow. And unfortunately, they're hard to predict. But you have to get out, you have to find out where are they in the process. Are they going to reach the stage of condemnation if you're concerned about it being taken, your property being taken, and if so, when, so you can make these financial decisions. And if it's your home, it's going to be life more important decision, I think, if it's your home than the commercial people.
Now I'm going to talk a little bit now about the situation where you're designated, there's a plan in place, and you're on the acquisition list, and you receive served to you a complaint, a verified complaint, and an order to show cause and some other legal documents saying that your property is being taken. What do you do at that point in time, and what are your rights with respect to that? And for that, I'm going to have Tim talk a little bit.
Yeah, let's assume the plans were at step 8 over here. Plans adopted, developers in place, they're standing there with the shovel, they're ready to start digging. What do they do? The first step, now they have to come over here where they go through and this is a pretty standard condemnation flow chart that, goes to DOT, schools, roads, and as well as redevelopment. First, they have to come out and appraise your property. You will get a letter saying an appraiser will be out there and you're entitled to be there at that time to tell the appraiser, answer any questions. The appraiser may ask you for leases.
Could you get your own appraiser?
Well, at that stage, you're going to absolutely get your own appraiser, because that first step, when they get their appraiser and they get it done, then it goes to step 2. Before they can file a complaint, the municipality, I'll just say municipality just to make it easier, before the town can file a complaint, they have to try to buy your property. They have to enter into bona fide negotiations. So what they do generally is, guy comes out, appraises, gives a written appraisal. Now you're at step two. They will give you a 14-day letter. And what that letter says is, let's assume the appraised value is $300,000. They will send you a letter. Please find and close an appraisal. As you know, redevelopment plan has been approved, and we want to buy your property. We make an offer for $300,000. Please respond within 14 days. If you don't respond within 14 days, we will assume you're not interested in negotiating the sale of your property. The reason that 14 days is in there is under New Jersey law, they say, well, if they make an offer and they never hear from you, we got to set a deadline. If you don't respond, we'll assume you're not interested and that the town tried. That's within that 14-day time period. You've got to come back and respond and say, let's assume you think your property's worth $450,000. Say, you guys are crazy. $300,000, it's ridiculous. You can't just come back and say, you guys are crazy. It's ridiculous. You've got to come back and try to negotiate. You may look at the appraisal and say, you're off by 5,000 square feet. Or there's a math error. Or you're using the wrong leases. These leases are crazy. Or here, take into account these three comparable sales. Where last year I did a refinancing, here's my bank appraisal. Guys are all wet. Come up with your number. Enter into that negotiations.
What type of appraisal do they do too? Market analysis? Or
they generally, what they'll do is, depending on the type of property, it's basically, most of the time it'll be comparable sales for residential, for commercial. They'll generally use comparable sales and the income approach, and oftentimes they'll throw in the cost approach. But it's primarily driven by the market approach, or for commercial properties, income approach. It'll generally be an MAI appraisal. You know, expect it to be low. I wish I could say otherwise. And they have to make an offer on that. One thing you can't do is just come back and say, well, you offer me $300, but you're taxing me at $500. This is ridiculous. Courts say that's not good enough. You can't come back with your tax assessment. In fact, there's some cases, a recent one, where I wrote down the numbers, it's being assessed at $3.4 million. The may have been offered $600,000. Now, you would think if they're assessing me at 3.4 and they offered me 6, that's pretty good evidence that something's wrong here. The property owner didn't come back and say, well, your appraisal's all wrong because you missed this or you did that. They just said, look at the appraised value. But they never came back and said, your appraisal's wrong, take into account A, B, and C, and I'll accept $1.2 million. So what the court said, it takes two to negotiate. If you look at their appraisal and you try to negotiate, I find it to be very difficult to negotiate unless you have your own appraisal. That ultimately is what it comes down to. When their appraiser goes out, it's a good indication your property's in play and the acquisition's coming. You now want to go out and get yourself a good appraiser to come out and give you a good appraisal. You can wait, because you may, if you think your property's worth $450,000 and there's some comparable sales and it comes in at $425,000, go negotiate. You get yourself a good deal. However, if you think your property's worth $450,000 and that appraisal's at $300,000, good luck getting it up to your number without a very good appraisal. So now you're done, you've gone through the appraisal and you're miles apart, which is standard.
One more question.
Sure.
You can't base the appraisal on the potential use of the property?
The property gets appraised at its highest and best use.
Okay.
So let's assume I have a 50-acre farm that I could build 10 homes on it, but I'm farming turnips. They don't pay me the value for what it's worth as a farm growing turnips. I get the full value based upon its highest and best use. Now, I can't say the highest and best use is to build the World Trade Center on there or build Disneyland. I've got to come forward. It's got to be legally permissible, financially feasible. It has to make sense. So that's where the appraiser has to come in and look at the zoning, look at the setbacks, and say, okay. And you don't get the value as if it was built. It's just, all right, if I have a farm of 50 acres, can build 10 homes, and you want to build 10 homes on it, and you're Mr. Builder, what would you pay me for it? You may say, well, I'd probably pay you, $75,000 a lot, because you don't have approvals and I got to do all that. Now, if I have approvals and you can start building, maybe it's worth $110,000 a lot. And that's where the appraisers can differ of what's the highest and best use. And you get into that sometimes with warehouse space. Maybe the highest and best use is a conversion to office, rip it down. Maybe it's to use it as a warehouse. Oftentimes environmental factors come in. We had a case down in Trenton, it was warehouse space. It would have been a great location for residential. The problem is if we had to clean it up to a residential standard, my Lord, the cost would be astronomical. To keep it as a warehouse, it made more sense. So, you have to sit down with your appraiser. For homes, it's a matter of getting 3 or 4 good comparable sales. The residential properties, I think, are much easier. The commercial properties can be a little tricky if you're running your own business in there, but there might be a better use. So you do get the highest and best use of the property, and that can be a contested issue.
I should also note that, and this may be applicable to some of you, if you own a property, let's say in downtown Somerville, that is more intense than what current zoning permits, and you have a legal non-conforming use, it was built in 1950, it's twice as dense as what it is, as what's permitted under current zoning, the town has to pay you for the value of that legal non-conformity. They can't pay you for the highest and best use under current zoning if the highest and best use under current zoning is less than what you currently have there. So if you have 3 stores on a lot that only should permit 2 based upon current zoning, they have to pay you for the value of your legal non-conforming use.
You say the best use is what's there now.
Right.
Well, it's illegal. It's there.
So it's all based on current zoning, not the zoning and the plan.
It's based on what you can do under current zoning or with reasonable variances, reasonable, or what you currently have there. If you have a legal non-conforming use, it was built in 1950 and 1980 and zoning came in and made it illegal, the fact that it was legal when it was there, it continues to stay legal, given certain parameters and circumstances, assuming that those are in your favor, the value of that property now is a legal non-conforming use. You have to get paid for that value, which may be higher than the highest and best you could get under current zoning.
You also don't get any benefit from the plan coming in.
Right.
It's called project enhancement. So they don't have to pay you extra for something that they're going to do. They don't get the double whammy there. Right. So you have to try to factor out that they call project enhancement. Okay. Or if it was a waste incinerator, that would drive property values down, you also wouldn't get the negative implications. It's just generally positive. So then what they would do is negotiations are terminated and they file a complaint with the court. Within 3 or 4 weeks, you're in front of the judge. You'd be right down here at the courthouse in front of the new assignment judge. On that return date, sheriff comes out, gives it to you, or they serve it by mail. Judge decides right away, quickly, within 3 or 4 weeks, can they take the property? You have a verified complaint, order to show cause, and service of process. Order to show cause just gives you the hearing date. That's that initial hearing. That, in a quick time period, the court will do 2 things. Decide, 1, can they take it? If they can, you go to step 2, which is fight over the value. So within a 3 or 4 week time period of getting that complaint, you're in essence at the trial date of whether or not they can take your property. You have to be prepared and raise your defenses on that date. If you don't, game over on taking. They now can take your property. You still fight over how much they're going to pay you. And then it's a show me the money case, as opposed to you're not taking my property. So you have to, once you get that notice, if you do want to, that they're going to come out to inspect, you got to start getting your ducks in order and really decide, am I going to try to fight this case to keep my property? And how much is that going to cost me? Or am I just going to fight value? If you're just going to fight value, you're going to have to show up to that first hearing. The other thing the judge will do, once the judge says it's okay to take the property, they appoint 3 commissioners. It's usually a lawyer, too, and then a real estate person from the county. What those 3 people do is they'll set up a date 2 or 3 months out, come on into a legal office. It's informal. And 3 commissioners will sit there. The town will put on their appraiser. you put on your appraiser, and they'll come up with a number. They don't give you a written decision or tell you why. They say, it's at 300, property owners at 500, 475, that's the number. Either side doesn't want it. They get a do-over in court, and most of the time people want jury trials. So you still have your trial. The idea with the commissioners is to try to save some costs. Go through this informal process. Hopefully the commissioners will look at it, think it's good, give you a number. And then also, if once you get your number at the commissioners, you also can negotiate. So if you get 475, you really wanted 5, you file your appeal and you go negotiate, you're okay. The other thing is in most cases, when they want to get going, they will, with their complaint, they will deposit their offer in court. Under example, it was $300,000. You can pull that money right out of court and use it to fund your case. That's providing you're not challenging the actual taking of your property. You're just fighting over the value. What's interesting, it doesn't happen often, is they don't have to put the money in right away. They can wait a while, litigate with you, see what the number is. If they don't like it, dismiss and go home. Unlikely in a redevelopment plan, because it's such a big undertaking, they are going to acquire it unless it's a huge commercial piece of property that's too expensive. So in most cases, what they will do is they will file a complaint, immediately file what's called a declaration of taking, deposit the $300 in the court. If you're not going to fight the taking, get that money out right away, put it in your pocket, and then fight over how much more they're going to pay you. After the, if you lose at that first hearing where you're fighting the taking of your property, you can take that right up to the appellate division. Vince and I are up there now in another case. And then the appellate division will decide, and the project has to stop, as it leads to your property, while you're up on appeal. If you don't, you go to a commissioner's hearing, you have a trial, then it's a normal case after that. At the trial, it's battle of the appraisers. Their appraiser versus your appraiser, and either a court or jury will make the determination. The last step is the relocation expenses, because during this process, once they deposit the money, file the declaration of taking, and you don't appeal and the judge says they can take your property, they own it, you're out. They'll sit down, you get a call from a relocation person and say, we're going to relocate you. They have to provide you with relocation assistance. One thing they do have to do before they can displace you, move you at all, is they got to take a plan, file it with the state, and get the state's okay. They have to move all your tenants, pay for the full move, and they have to move you out of your property. If it's residential, it's simpler. You basically go out. I recommend you always go out yourself, get three good insured moving companies, get the three estimates, show them to the town, say, I'm going to use one of these folks. They say fine. They'll pay to move you to your new location. Commercial properties, it's much more difficult, because depending on your type, if you have a restaurant, you're going to have plumbers, electricians disconnecting stuff, moving it to another place. You need signage. You might need special, fit out to accommodate your equipment. Those relocation cases get much more complex. One of my favorites is a hot dog place that had to get relocated. The relocation costs were $2 million. Because they had to disassemble, raw meat and cooked meat and the FDA, and, everybody was looking at, it's to make hot dogs, it's a scary case because I learned about hot dogs. But it was $2 million to what they had to do to the new place. It had to be washed down a couple times a day, so they had to, the floor had to be done a certain way. Any modifications to accommodate your equipment in the new location falls under the relocation benefits. That can be pretty hotly contested, as opposed to a generic move. Joe the mover comes in, moves you from A to B, not a whole lot going on there. For the businesses, it can get very tricky. For the tenants, it can get very tricky too. Where am I going to? The relocation benefits in New Jersey are terrible. Can't use the word I'd like to use. They're terrible. They don't provide you with much assistance at all, especially if you have a below market lease and you're just getting by in your business. You'll have a tough time relocating. And you have to get aggressive. You have to protect yourself. Most leases have a tenant forfeiture provision in it that says upon condemnation, this lease is terminated and the property owner gets all the money for the building. Tenant still is entitled to relocation benefits. So sometimes tenants may want to challenge that lease provision, whether it's enforceable, whether the landlord properly followed it. Most leases do have that as a pretty standard clause. It's an important issue in this time period. If you're negotiating as a tenant, you want to know going in, if you're going to put money into a building and it could be condemned, what are my rights? And if you're a landlord, you want to make sure that you're protected. If you have a tenant, you don't want to share any of the kitty with them. And I think these are all the issues that you have to be aware of as you're going along in this process. If you think they're going to take your property 5 years out, you may not be concerned. If you think it's going to be next year, you may be very concerned, depending on what your plans are. And I think that's why it's very important to come to something like this and do some of your own reading and research on what you can and can't do.
Yeah, if any of you are tenants, commercial tenants, and you have a below market lease and you're condemned, the value of that below, the difference between a market level and a below, whatever the below market level is, you could try to get in condemnation proceedings. One of the things that Tim didn't talk about, maybe you can talk briefly about it, is once valuation is established, there is an allocation hearing with respect to all the people that have rights to the award. And if you own a commercial building and there are a number of tenants in there and your lease does not preclude them from going in and getting value for the improvements that they put into the building, or the difference between a below market value lease, if they have it, and what the current fair market value is, that'll all be diced and determined at a allocation hearing after the value has been established.
Yeah, it's really the final stage. If there's a fight over who gets the kitty, it's done at the end generally. You have mortgagees, lien holders, they're easy ones. If you have a $200,000 mortgage and they offer you $300,000, that mortgage is getting paid first. Taxes are getting paid first. And I don't want to get into it tonight, but there's some issues if you have any environmental problems. So if you have any older industrial sites, it's very important to, before they come in and start ripping down buildings, you get an environmental expert in there to help you out, so you're not paying more than you should of the cleanup costs.
What if your neighbors are environmental concerned?
If your neighbors are environmental concerned, that could impact the value of your property if, for example, you have underground migration. The appraiser may try to make a location adjustment on your property. It really depends the type of, if you have underwater because there was a dry cleaner, or you just have, above ground nuisance type stuff, that really is important. And also, you may want to bring a suit at that time against your neighbor. So if you have a neighbor who's caused the pollution and you're involved in a condemnation case, you may, what we call a third party, pull them in to say, if I'm paying, you're paying. And then if it happens to be a commercial business, hopefully there'll be an insurance policy picking it up. So when you have a condemnation, sometimes they can get very complicated. The environmental ones get very tricky and can get out of hand very quickly just because of the cleanup costs. And a lot of them are unknown. I have a client that they're pulling out tanks. One of them we even know about. So as they're digging, we're sitting there like this. And luckily there was no spill. But had there been a spill that was under the tank that we didn't know about, it's on our nickel. And would have been unfortunate, but we've owned the property for a long time period. Now, we might have gone back and tried to look at who owned it before and so on, but $100,000 later, we may or may not have made progress. But fortunately, in that case, they did an investigation before they went in. We brought on our own consultants to monitor it to make sure things were done properly. And fortunately, it worked out. Anybody have any other questions or anything specific to this area or the condemnation in general?
If not, help yourselves.
And we're going to stick around. So if you
we'll be here for a while.
Want to grab a bite and have some questions. But we do thank you for coming out. We do encourage you to continue to monitor this process. You do have our emails and phones. Don't be bashful. We didn't want to ask your questions. We wouldn't have driven up here today, and we are free to answer any questions you have down the road.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's installment of the New Jersey Legal Update by Stark & Stark. And be sure to join us each and every Friday for another insightful discussion. We'd like to hear from you. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information about Stark & Stark and the services we provide, email us at podcast@stark-stark.com.